Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 1, Text 25 and 26. Since text 25 does not have a purport, I'm going to just read through the Sanskrit and the translation, and then I'll go on to text 26.
Agni dhridmajjiva yagya bahu mahavira hiranyaruto grita prishta Savane medhatiti viti hotra kavaya iti sarva evamni namana.
Translation. The 10 sons of Maharaj Priyavarta were named Agnidra, Idmajiva, Yagyabahu, Mahavira, Hiranyareta, Rita Prishta, Savana, Medhatiti, Viti Hotra, and Kavi. These are also names of Agni, the fire god. Text 26.
Itesham kavir mahavira savana iti traya asan udradva retatasta atma vidhyayam arbha bhavad arbhya krita pari chaya par paramaham sayam Evashramam Abhajan.
Okay, translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Three among these 10, namely Kavi, Mahavira and Savan, lived in complete celibacy. Thus trained in brahmachari life from the beginning of childhood, they were very conversant with the highest perfection known as the Paramahamsa Ashram. Please repeat.
Three among these 10,
named Kavi, namely Kavi, Mahavira and Savan, lived in complete celibacy. Thus trained in brahmachari life, from the beginning of childhood, they were very conversant with the highest perfection known as Paramahamsa Ashram. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The word Urdhva Retasa in this verse is very significant. Urdhva Retaha refers to one who can control sex life and who instead of wasting semen by discharging it can use this most important substance accumulated in the body to enrich the brain. One who can completely control sex life is able to work wonderfully with his brain, especially in remembering. The students who simply hear Vedic instructions once from their teacher could remember them verbatim without needing to read books, which therefore did not exist in former times. Another significant word is Arbha Bhavat, which means from very childhood. Another meaning is from being very affectionate to children. In other words, Paramahamsa life is dedicated for the benefit of others. Just as a father sacrifices many things out of affection for his son, great saintly persons sacrifice all kinds of bodily comforts for the benefit of human society. In this connection, there is a verse concerning the six Goswamis.
Tektyatunnam ashesha mandala pati shrinim sada tuchvat bhutvati na ganeshakau karunaya kaupina kanthashritau.
Because of their compassion for the poor fallen souls, the six Goswamis gave up their exalted positions as ministers and took their vows as mendicants, thus minimizing the bodily wants. As far as possible, they each accepted only a loincloth and a begging bowl. Thus they remained in Vrindavan to execute the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by compiling and publishing various Vaishnava literatures. I'll repeat the translation again. Three among these ten, namely Kavi, Mahavir and Savan, lived in complete celibacy. Thus trained in brahmachari life from the beginning of childhood, they were very conversant with the highest perfection known as Paramahamsa Ashram.
Om Ajnana Trimandasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Militam Yena तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टां स्वापतं सेन भूतले श्री स्वयं रुद्रप्रदमयं ददाति स्वप्रदान्तिकम् So this is a very nice verse. I like the way, you know, it's said, if Shukadeva Goswami says, Paramahansa Ashram, you know, how all the four orders of life is an ashram, basically, you know, whether it's the Grihastha Ashram, Brahmachari Ashram, you know. So this is the Paramahansa Ashram. And Prabhupada describes the nature of these Paramahansa, why after being trained as good brahmacharis they can actually enter this ashram by doing real benefit to society. And one wonders, you know, what is the real benefit, you know, to society? I mean, you see that so many religions, they talk about, you know, how we can benefit society, you know, through artha, kama, moksha, you know, so many different ways. But Srimad Bhagavatam, it actually puts down this kind of materialistic religion. It actually glorifies that kind of religion which is pure in nature. In other words, like in Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, chapter 2, verse 6, talks about how the pure prime occupational duty of mankind is to serve Krishna, is to do pure devotional service. Especially that kind of occupation which is without, which is unmotivated and uninterrupted. However, we know that most of us are not on that platform, you know, of doing pure devotional service to the Lord. But these great souls, these Paramahansas, they also can benefit, you know, people who are not, you know, doing pure devotional service. They are so kind, they are so giving and so concerned that they actually reach out to people who, you know, who need a carrot in front of us, you know, who need to be attracted to, you know, who have material desires, you know. And you'll see how in so many stories in the Bhagavatam, like Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, how in the end, you know, Shukadeva Goswami will talk about that if you read this story, you will get so much benefit. In other words, you may get a good son or a good progeny or whatever. And that's because, you know, the author recognizes that we actually don't have, you know, we have so many material desires. And we need that carrot stick in front of us. So we can read these stories and through, even though we have material desires, we can actually eventually get on the platform of pure devotional service just by getting purified, you know, through reading these stories. And you see the story of Dhruva Maharaj, how he had, it's such a good story for us, you know, how he had so many material desires. But a Paramahansa like Narad Muni, you know, he's recognizing that and he's giving him a process of bhakti yoga, which will purify his heart eventually, right? The process of bhakti yoga, which can be done in any time, place, and circumstance, and through which he, you know, he could rise on that platform to the extent that when he actually saw Krishna face to face, he was just so ashamed of himself for having those material desires, and he was purified. I mean, the story of Dhruva Maharaj is just amazing. I mean, what a life, you know, when you think about it, you know, a 5-year-old boy, you know, seeing with so much determination, seeing the Lord face to face in 6 months, and then growing up to be the king of the world, and ruling the kingdom for what, 18,000 years, you know, at that time people lived it to be 100,000 years, and then, not only that, in the end, you know, going back to Godhead. You know, after Krishna, just like with Maharaj Priyavarta, where, you know, Krishna promises him that even though you don't want this kingdom, I will protect you if you enter household life. And same thing with Dhruva Maharaj. Krishna promised him that you do your duty in the best possible way and I will protect you in the end. I will take you back to Godhead. So his destination was already decided. And after ruling the kingdom for so many years, there's a plane from the Vaikuntha Loka that comes and takes him back. And not only that, he takes his money with him, you know. So he's so grateful, you know, that he did not forget the words of his mother, even though it was like a two-minute conversation where his mother actually didn't preach to him about Bhagavad Gita or the soul and the body. She was a simple woman, you know. She just knew, you know, that she had heard from authorities that if we have any material desires, we should just simply surrender to the Lord. That's all. No matter what our situation is, whether we have material desires, whether we don't have material desires, or we are seeking liberation, in either one of the cases, we should just simply surrender to the Lord, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And just by saying those few words, you know, she actually had the opportunity to also go back to Godhead. So this is the result of good training. This is the result of good brahmacharya training, that we can actually, you know, have paramahansas. We can actually make paramahansas. Even though the mother does not, is not qualified. In other words, she may not know the Vedic scriptures, as you see in the case of Suniti, you know, but she was self-realized, you know, just by knowing the essence of the scriptures. She actually was a great paramahansa herself. But the point is that we may not be able to do these austerities in life, a lot of us, you know, men or women, you know, but because we take shelter of these great paramahansas, and you see in the case of Dhruva Maharaj how he took shelter of his spiritual master, we can actually reach the supreme destination of life. And of course, there's so many other paramahansas that here Prabhupada quotes the six Goswamis as such a great example of paramahansa life, where, you know, they left, you know, everything, you know. They were big zamindars, and they were used to talking to big businessmen, and Sanatana Goswami was the prime minister of, you know, in the government of Nawab Hussain Shah. And after you met him, he just decided to just give up everything and dedicate his, you know, his life to, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and how he left everything to give us these wonderful literatures. And same thing with the other Goswamis. And it's not such an easy thing to just give up something that you've seen it as your birthright, you know, as you see it growing up in that, you know. Then another good example is Prahlad Maharaj, you know, during his prayers, when he gives his prayers to pacify the Lord, when the Lord is very angry and nobody can pacify him except for Prahlad, and Brahma asks him to go forward and appease the Lord, then there's a verse where he says that, "My Lord, I don't have a problem. I'm completely absorbed in thoughts of you. So I'm not fearful of material existence, but I am fearful for these fools and rascals who have taken the path of material sense gratification." And he said there are so many saintly persons who just simply care about their own welfare, and they go to the Himalayas and they meditate without really caring about the people in general and trying to uplift them. But for me, that's not the path. I really want to, I want to help them. I want to help the people who are engrossed in material life, and thereby I'm willing to suffer here. So in the same mood, and you can see how Prahlad Maharaj, you know, he goes to this demoniac school, and he actually preaches to his demon friends. And, you know, in spite of the fact that he could get caught and punished, but how he, and he was so fearless. I mean, even with his father, he was so fearless. So that's the nature of these paramahansas, very, very fearless in terms of preaching. And, of course, Prabhupada also, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we know of Vasudev Dutt and his mood of compassion and his mood of renunciation is very, 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 very good. Where he prays that I'm willing to take the sinful reactions of every living entity within the universe and suffer their reaction, but please, my Lord, please take everybody back to Godhead. Please purify them. And Prabhupada writes in a purport how, comparing him with Jesus Christ, you know, who's also known as such a compassionate soul, where he forgave the sins of his of those who crucified him. But he says that, however, Jesus Christ did not was able to completely free, you know, them of their sinful reactions. In other words, he did not free them completely from this existence of birth and death here in the material world. Unlike Vasudev Dutt, who actually delivered, you know, who wanted to deliver every person from their sinful reaction and actually purify their hearts. So Prabhupada says, I mean, he's the most compassionate person, Vasudev Dutt, within the whole universe. And you can see how much Lord Chaitanya, praised him, that he was willing to sell his body to Vasudev Dutt, that my body belongs to Vasudev Dutt. So these are, these Paramahansas whose life that we can read and get inspiration from. Because preaching basically is a very selfless activity, and we know that, from the example of Prabhupada, how much trouble he had to go through in life, trying to, bring this to us, the times when he came to the West and a crazy man followed him and he was running, for his life, and and the fact that he actually, when he first came, he was an elderly gentleman from Vrindavan who was used to a nice life in Vrindavan, where people actually respected older people, and a simple life. He was missing his deities, but when he comes to the West, he actually had to cook and feed his disciples, the disciples didn't know what how to treat an elderly gentleman, and he had to do so many things. He had to live in those circumstances, and what he went through. So preaching is a very selfless activity, and not everybody can do that way. An example is like a parents, they do so much for their children, knowing that one day the children can just walk away and forget the parents. In some cases, be actually very abusive also. And look at what they put out, the sacrifice they put out, for them. So it's a very selfless activity, and we all have some experience of that. How Jaya Bhadra Mataji is talking about how she went on book distribution and she got spat at, right? Somebody spit at you? Yeah? So we know that we have some experience of, what it means. We may be preaching to a devotee for years and years, and nothing may happen, or that same devotee may come around and get upset with us and hate us. We have some all experience of that. So another point here is that what is it that makes these people so compassionate? What are the things they use? Through what means do they use to make us enlightened? And that's one is through preaching activities, and that means changing our hearts, through changing our hearts, and we see in the case of Narad Muni how, he was able through his preaching, because these people are so empowered, they have the ability to change the hearts of the people. Just like when Prabhupada came, everybody, people who did not understand his importance, they said, there's other great souls, but they come, you can see by that example, there are other people, spiritualists who came from India, but they were not really able to change the hearts of the people. The movement was there for some time, and then, the followers were still doing all kinds of nonsense. But here you see Prabhupada, in a very short time, he changed the hearts of the people, completely purified them. Same thing with Narad Muni. We have that example that when Megrali, the hunter, right? How he's changing, when he met him, he was so compassionate. Not only to the animals, he was feeling sorry for the animals because they were being half killed, but he was also compassionate to Megrali, both of them. And one may think that, okay, let me be compassionate to the person because he's suffering, but forget about the animals. You know how the animal rights movement, they are so compassionate to the animals, but they forget it's okay for them to kill, human beings, or allow that kind of killing in different ways, right? Abortion and so many different ways. But Here you see Narad Muni Paramahansa, who actually also cares about the animals. He's feeling compassion for these animals who are being half killed. And so he's able to purify Mugrari as well as, you know, save the animals. So preaching is one way, you know, why, you know, the souls are able to benefit society. And another way is through the books and instruction. And of course we have the example of Goswamis and Prabhupada. You know, his books are, you know, alive, and we have so much, we can, so much, I mean, just through his books, I mean, we see throughout the world, I mean, just by reading a little bit of book, just reading his books, people get so affected. And then through chastisement, you know, how, sometimes devotees, we know the spiritual masters can chastise, and thereby, through their chastisement, they can actually purify our hearts. And what is a good example of that? Does anybody can think of, you know? Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good example. Yeah, of how even as a little pure devotee, I mean, he was bewildered and killing yakshas right and left, and how the seniors, you know, his seniors, Swayambhu, Manu, and Kuvera, they had to come and actually advise him, and in a way chastise him for him to actually. And that example, Prabhupada gives, writes in the purport how we all need that. We all need our God brothers and sisters to actually, you know, show us the path, and our seniors especially, you know, to show us the path where, you know, we can do that. And of course, another story is Narad Muni chastising Nal Kuvera and Manigriva, right? How through their, you know, because of their misbehavior, he chastised them to become trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, and eventually they could see Krishna face to face and get purified. So through the chastisement, they were able to actually see Krishna and get purified and get Krishna's association. So the chastisement of pure devotees is very, very beneficial for us and very, very good for us. And of course, by giving us the holy name, right? We give great souls give us the holy name, and we have the wonderful example of Haridas Thakur, who even in spite of being beaten up in 24 marketplaces, he did not give up chanting the holy name, and was traveling to every village, you know, giving people the holy name. So. So this is Paramahansa life, and this is what Prabhupada is saying, is that from being very affectionate to children means just comparing that to Paramahansa, who are very, very affectionate to the living souls and very, very compassionate. And this kind of thing is actually this kind of compassion that we have, you know, it actually develops, it's easier to develop through childhood. You know, when there's good training. And that's why you see how Priyavarta's 10 sons, you know, were very well, they had brahmachari training whereby they could become good grahasthas, you know. And you see that in other places in the Bhagavatam, in the 6th canto, how Daksha, the story of Daksha, where he's sending his, you know, when Brahma asked him to create progeny, he's sending his sons to Narad Muni for instruction. You know, even though, you know, Narad Muni is making them into brahmacharis each time he's doing that. But he still does that, you know. So in the case of Priyavarta, also he trained his children into a solid brahmachari life, whereby they could become Paramahansas. Because Prabhupada writes that unless we give this kind of training to everybody, children or to young people coming into the movement, it's practically impossible. It's practically impossible for them to become brahmanical. Because he says in this world, you know, is Maya is so strong. In other words, in one quote, he talks about how when Cupid strikes anybody, you know, is when lust develops, practically everything, all our education, all our training, just goes haywire. You know, there's nothing you can do. So he talks about it as in the case of Ajamal, how, you know, even though he had such good training, you know, he was just a moment, you know, when he witnessed the embracing of a prostitute, you know, with a man, his mind was bewildered. And I mean, he was so well trained, and he left his chaste wife and his parents, and his, you know, got involved in so many abominable things like that. So he says, "What about your young people? I mean, they are being exposed to this every day of their life. You know, the cinemas and the billboards and all these things. What hope do they have? You know, literally, what hope do they have?" So he said, "Okay, for that purpose, he started the Gurukula. You know." So the hope is the chanting, getting them attracted to chanting the holy name. And you see, as we go on, in the case of Ajama, in the end, it was the holy name that saved him. You know, even though he was thinking about his son, but the holy name was so powerful. So similarly, you know, when we train our children and give them this attraction of the holy name, we had such a wonderful kirtan. And I saw Mataji with a little baby, you know, where she's being exposed to this, you know, from childhood. You know, even if people like us and from India, where we were given some semblance of Vedic culture, I mean, you can't say that we were chanting from day one. No, you know, we were quite a bit in Maya also, you know. So this process of Brahmacharya training is so important for our young people, because this is our only hope, you know. And what is this Brahmacharya training that... you know, here they're talking about is basically to like Prabhupada for children. He said that you know, it's very important, especially from brahmacharis, to understand that every woman is a mother. It's as simple as that, because brahmacharya means restraining from sex life. I mean, that spoils the whole life, right? From if it's, you know, done without regulation, right? In Brahmachari ashram, right? So he says that, okay, then we see all women as mothers. So when a child is trained, or any young student coming into the movement is trained to see every woman as mother other than his wife, then he knows nothing else. He understands, okay, well, a woman is to be seen as a mother. So this is very, very important, Prabhupada said, to give that kind of training. And of course, Brahmacharya training also means, you know, getting up in the morning, you know, getting up in the morning for Mangal Aarti, chanting the holy name, reading Shastra, so many nice things, you know. So, and he said that, you know, for Gurukula training, he said for children, that it doesn't matter, you know, he said the only austerity, he said, for children is to, you know, get up in the morning and attend Mangal Aarti with the elders. Clap and dance and attend. He said the rest of the time they can play and they can eat as much as they want to. That's the only thing, because he knew that this was very crucial to Brahmachari training. This chanting and dancing and getting up in the morning, and then he wanted his children, all the children, to read Shastra. So important. Because that, you know, puts, you know, we don't become sentimental. You know, our brain, our intelligence is situated in the right place. You know, we can understand things the way they are. So this kind of training is so important for creating a society like ours, you know, with well-trained people. And you see in these stories, practically every story on and on talks about this kind of Paramahansa life. This, and Prabhupada talks so nicely. He, you know, you would think that these people, I mean, they are like, you know, there's no way anybody can be like them. But he says so casually how everybody can become Dhruva. You know, everybody can become Prahlad Maharaj, because this process is so powerful. The process is so wonderful. You know, no matter in whatever situation we may be, whether we are in the West, whether we are in India, no matter who tries it, with whatever adjustments he has to make according to situation, this process is going to work. It's such a powerful process. So he's giving us this encouragement that we need to do this. Yeah. I'm going to stop at this point and ask if anybody had some questions or comments. Or
regarding preaching, is it wrong to think that there are like two kind of mode in preaching. Like one is saying like there is compassion, you feel how people are suffering and in need of Krishna, and you really want to preach and dedicate your life with that. And the other is that you understand that actually all this is temporary and that one day or the other you will reach Krishna. So it's actually like all part of your lila, and we are kind of like preaching in a very like detached mood. We don't really believe that these people are suffering, because it's kind of illusion also. And so like is it wrong like to think that it's just like a lila, you know, you are part of the lila, you're not really into it, but you're taking it as, you know, like a
Okay. Well, you know, we are in this process of bhakti yoga, and we, you know, it's very difficult. I mean, it's really, we haven't, even though we are trying, we really don't have that deep compassion that is being exhibited here by these great souls. So we simply try to follow the instructions of our spiritual master. I mean, that's the best we can do at this point, you know. We just, our spiritual master wants to us to preach, wants to distribute books. So we simply follow that instruction. And when we go out and preach and distribute books, one day we're going to develop this compassion, you know, this deep compassion that these acharyas had, and we can do that. But as of now, I feel like, you know, when, you know, I just, you know, feel totally unqualified to actually, of course we feel some compassion, you know, and it's better, you know, in order, you know, the two things that you told, you said, now the it's better to develop some kind of compassionate feeling rather than feeling that this world is just temporary and these people are meant to suffer, because that really is not the right mood. I mean, as you know, devotees, they do feel for the suffering of everyone, you know, because they experience it themselves. Now, our suffering may be a little different from that kind of suffering out there, you know, and we have Krishna in the equation, but suffering nonetheless, because we've all gone through that kind of suffering of the people out there, you know. Okay. Yes. 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 That's a very good point, Mataji, because you know, we cannot, I mean, we can feel compassion to some extent, but we are really not capable of feeling compassion for all the living entities out there, just like these great Paramahansas felt. And what to speak of Krishna's compassion, you know. His compassion is even beyond that. You know, his compassion for us is what keeps us, you know, here. I mean, surviving. I mean, his compassion to want us back to him, back in Godhead, is nothing compared to anything in the world. So, very nice point. Yeah. So if we can just get a little bit of that, a little drop of that, and just follow, you know, with faith, the instructions of our spiritual master, our life can be successful. Yes, Baba.
Non-devotees make a big offense to the, so they preach, but otherwise if people offended them, do they make progress or they go back?
Yes. Like for Prahlad's case, his father made an offense to him, you know, offended him like that. Yeah, it's you know, in the end he was killed by due to those offenses. So yes, that reaction is always there. And also in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, he, you know, his stepmother, Surichi, had done a grave offense towards him, and he was punished. She was punished, and also her son Uttama was punished, whereby he was killed by the Yakshas, and she died in the forest fire trying to find him. So yes, the offenses to devotees is very, you know, is the reaction is there. However, a pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, he was so kind that he forgave, and he still asked Krishna to save his father. You know, just like Christ, you know, even though they offended him, but he prayed for mercy. Oh, well, it's only by the mercy again of the Vaishnavas that you know, the even the most sinful people, you know, can be, you know, saved from the offenses that they may commit. Like, you know, you go on Sankirtan, somebody may be very offensive, right? But by the mercy of the Sankirtan devotee and his compassion, you know, or just being the instruments of Prabhupada, can we be actually, you know, saved from, can these people be saved from those offenses? And also the power of the holy name is so, you know, is so powerful that if just like you go in Harinam, I mean, just by hearing it, you know, their hearts become purified, you know. So again, the significance of, you know, of spreading the holy name is that all these people who have offended, you know, devotees or are sinful, they can actually you know, purified. Their hearts can be purified through the chanting. Yes, Mother.
Like in the case of
Jagannath,
Lord Chaitanya was there, his spirit is pure.
Yes. Yes, yes. Very good example. Lord Nityananda being so compassionate to Jagai and Madai. Yes, Madhi.
Still, if he was being killed by Lord Chaitanya, I mean, that's an amazing mercy. So, I mean, it's kind of like saying that, I mean, maybe not because Jagai and Madai, because of the compassion they got, love of God, even if they were being killed by Lord Chaitanya, they would have achieved liberation.
Yeah, here the reason why Lord Nityananda was chosen for this is because he was acting as an instrument for Lord Chaitanya. In other words, he saw himself, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he saw himself as a servant of Lord Chaitanya, you know, fulfilling his mission. He wanted to glorify his Lord, you know, so that he becomes so famous as the most benevolent avatar, you know. And he wanted to fulfill, you know, please his Lord. So that's why it was important for him to do this. And there was a difference, you know. Of course, we know Lord Chaitanya came with a disc because to kill rather than, you know, purify his heart, the hearts of Jagai and Madai, because of that reason. So the pure devotees are, in other words, the pure devotees are even more merciful than the Lord himself, you know. So if you take shelter of them.
Yes. Isn't it also, in order to have compassion, you have to have Krishna prema? You have to have love.
Yes, of course we are not, none of us have that pure love of God and pure compassion like we just discussed. So we just simply try to follow the orders of our spiritual masters and stay in association of devotees and, you know, thereby try to develop this compassion one day where we can feel that. So we just follow the process and take shelter of the devotees in the movement. We're just definitely not on that platform of feeling pure compassion. Yes, Radhika.
Just on that point and what Mother Jayananda was saying, I remember once, you might remember also, we went to this program. It was sort of a new age type program, religious service type thing, and everyone got together in a nice hotel room and conference room. They got together and they were singing some songs and so on. And near the end of the program, one of the songs was that everyone held each other's hands and they were singing this song, something like, "We have enough love for the whole world, we have enough love for the whole world." And just singing it, it was, you know, in terms of we have enough love for the whole world, it was sounding so ridiculous because here we were in this very posh hotel, all well fed, nicely clothed, everything. So many people out there suffering, and yet we're thinking, "I have enough love for everyone." But yet we're acting in ways that are so selfish, you know? And so it's kind of like, as this small living entity, how you know, our capacity even to love is limited. And yet if we connect to Krishna and connect through Parampara, as you're saying, then our capacity to love becomes unlimited because we connect with this larger repository.
Mm-hmm.
Because really Krishna has enough love for the whole world. He has enough love for the whole universe. We don't, but then we connect to Krishna and then we can give that love whenever Krishna wants us to give.
Yes. Just by connecting with Krishna, we are able to give that compassion to others, you know. You know, just by getting that love also, you know, unless we get that love, you know, from fellow, you know, from other devotees, you know, we can give that. We have to also have that experience of actually receiving that love. And that's why it's so wonderful to live in an association of devotees and in a community where there's so much of this giving, you know, giving this love. Because how else can we experience what spiritual love is? We have enough experience of material love, you know, you know, but we know how temporary that is, you know. Okay. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, not to be attached to the result, in other words, of being empowered by Krishna. And yeah, I mean, it's just it's something that will come naturally, you know. As devotees, we don't try to get this special privilege of, we have to feel very fallen, you know. Does anybody want to answer this question? We have to feel very fallen in terms of our capability, you know, of our eligibility by Krishna to, you know, and of course Krishna will, you know, if you just simply follow this process, you know, these great souls like Prabhupada, they are so empowered, you know, they are so empowered to, you know, if they give an instruction, you know, Prabhupada, whether, you know, the Shastras do not say that, it's going to happen. Just like chanting 16 rounds, you know, the Shastras talk about, you know, 60, every devotee should chant 64 rounds instead of 16 rounds. And many people have asked Prabhupada, you know, and also questioned later, you know, that we should really be chanting 64 rounds. But the point is that if Prabhupada, as a great acharya, you know, if he says that if everybody chants 16 good rounds, he will go back to Godhead. Krishna is going to fulfill that instruction, you know, because Krishna is sold to devotees like that. Krishna is so, you know, obliged to devotees like that for sacrificing so much. So we have to have that faith that whatever Prabhupada says, and if we just simply follow that, you know, process, then the results will be there. We don't have to endeavor for any kind of special empowerment by Krishna or by Prabhupada. It's just going to happen because Prabhupada said so, you know. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.